Radio.
The Proclaim 2014 podcasts. Recorded by Cradio and XT3.com.
This talk is How to Explain Your Faith Without Raising Your Voice by Father Nicholas Pierce.
It's my great pleasure to be here today. I wasn't able to be here this morning, but the conference seems to be going very well. And to share with you some of our learnings through the Catholic Voices movement about communicating our faith. Can I get a show of hands of how many people, before signing up for this workshop, knew anything about Catholic Voices Australia? Or
do.
Had heard something about it before, seen something, read. Okay, that's not too bad. How many of you thought it was a choir? Because you obviously haven't heard me sing. My mother thought it was a choir to begin with, and she thought it was quite ironic that I was the chaplain to a Catholic choir. Catholic Voices was founded in the United Kingdom around the time of Pope Benedict XVI's visit, which was 2010. It was founded by two lay people, both who had a background in media, but who were sick and tired of the church being presented poorly in the news media in particular, but also in the public forum more generally. So they've been to a debate, a public debate called Intelligence Squared. And I know that sometimes in Melbourne they do a similar thing where they poll the 100 or 50 people going into the debate. And the topic was that the church had been a force for good in the world. And the atheists had put their best three up and the Catholic Church had supposedly put their best three up. And it was something like 60% on the way in thought that the church had been a force for good. And on the way out, it was like 40%. So we didn't even just hold, we actually lost ground. So they really got together with this idea, in particular around the Pope's visit, knowing that the media would like to speak to people, but also acknowledging that the diocese, in particular, when the diocese speaks to the media, they speak on behalf of the bishop. So sometimes you're not going to want to put the bishop or his direct representative on 7:30 a.m. morning television where it's all just going to be a bit of a fuss. So that there's some opportunities and occasions where the bishop either cannot or chooses not to speak. But that the problem that was found was that the media would then ring the diocese would say no comment, and then the media would have no one to go to, or they would go to the wrong people. Normally disgruntled ex-Catholics. So they founded this movement called Catholic Voices, and it was founded under that final principle of that lay people have the right and the responsibility to speak on behalf of their faith. Sometimes you actually have more of a right and more of a responsibility, and more often than not, especially in today's culture, you can be more effective if you have the skills around it. So they found it in the UK, and in the time of the Pope's visit, had something in the realms of 200 TV, radio, and print media interviews from a grassroots campaign. From that point, it's then spread to 13 countries around the world, Australia being one of them. Catholic Voices Australia was started by a group of young lay Catholics, and I was part of the team at the very beginning and had taken the role as chaplain. It was in its infancy for about 6 or 8 months, and any of you that have been involved in lay movements or ecclesial movements or anything in the church, they spent a lot of time talking and working out the best way and how to do this and who do we invite and who do we write letters to. And there wasn't much going on until January last year. I remember the night very clearly. It was a Monday night and I just got home from my day off, dinner with my parents. I walked into the presbytery and I threw my mobile phone on the bed and I closed the bedroom door and went and watched CSI or something rubbish on a Monday night. It got to about 10:30, 10:45 and I was just about to go to bed and I thought I'll watch the news headlines. I flipped over to Channel 10 and the opening news was, anyone? No, not sexual abuse. The Pope's resignation. Pope Benedict resigned. And I'm thinking, come on, you've got to be joking, the Pope can't resign. The Pope doesn't resign. You were going, well, if the Pope had resigned, surely me as the assistant priest of Frankston would have heard before seeing it on Channel 4 News. So then I sort of tapped my pocket to check my phone and realised I didn't have my phone. So I then went in and got my phone off my bed, and there was like 15 missed calls, text messages, not because the Pope had consulted me before, but because everyone was going, the Pope's resigned, what are we doing? And Catholic Voices used this as their opportunity to launch, and launch very quickly. But as with much in the church, it was the Spirit moving and saying, get off your... I'm being recorded, I have to be there. Get off your butts and just do it. Don't worry about all the periphery stuff. Do it, and the other stuff will fall in place. So in the space of 2 weeks in Melbourne, they were able to find, convince, and train a team of 6 younger Catholics so that by the day that the Pope actually stepped down, they had a team ready to go. I want to show you just a little bit of footage now, which is from pretty much the wrap-up. So they had, in that period of time, something like 18 television interviews plus radio and media. So they went from nothing to 18 in overnight. So I wanted to show you.
The Pope stunned the Catholic Church earlier this month when he announced,
for the first time in 600 years,
first Pope to resign in 600 years.
Benedict XVI has taken off his red shoes, papal robes, and his papal ring and taken up residence outside of Rome.
Cardinals have held their first vote in the Sistine Chapel.
And when will we know who is his successor?
How do Catholics here in Australia see the current controversy and the future of the Church? Joining me now from our Melbourne studios is Natasha Marsh from Catholic Voices Australia.
Robert Dugdale is from a group called Catholic Voices, which represents young Catholics.
Dr. Michelle Rodriguez from Catholic Voices Australia.
Natasha Marsh from Catholic Voices Australia joins me now to discuss this historic vote.
Catholic Voices Australia aims to get the views of Catholics out into the public domain. So watching the abdication of Pope Benedict, what are your thoughts today?
I think obviously a resignation hasn't been seen for 600 years. I think it's an incredible act of humility and courage.
There are 1.2 billion Catholics around the world waiting for the announcement of the Pope. It's a very important time, and it's a very exciting time for us.
We saw the difference in the feel of the papacy, as you were, between John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI. You know, for non-Catholics, there was a visible difference in the kind of church. So I am very sure that the new Pope will bring his own personal charism, his own flavour. So the conclave comprises the College of Cardinals, that will number 115, and they'll move into the conclave in the not too distant future to decide the future Pope. I definitely feel as an independent Catholic woman completely valued, and I think that everyone, including men and women, will be praying for the Pope. Certainly feel that they well represent the Catholic people of the world. So they're going to be looking for a man who's a good teacher, a good governor, and first and foremost, a holy man, a man of prayer.
Catholic Voices' Natasha Marsh says Sydney Archbishop George Pell isn't considered to be in the mix.
It's always speculation, but there are 3 heavyweights at the moment.
I'm Natasha Marsh there from Catholic Voices joining us from Melbourne.
Dr. Rodriguez, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on Newsday. Appreciate your point of view. Thanks very much.
And Natasha Marsh from Catholic Voices Australia, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
So none of them had been on television before. And it took a lot of convincing to let them know that they had the capability to do it. And I think you'll see that they did remarkably well. And they represent the church. So following the initial training, the founders of Catholic Voices from the UK then came out and ran. We advertised locally within Melbourne to start with, and trained a team of 8 over a period of 4 weekends that started with a visit from the UK founders. And they've now since, over the last 12 months, been doing a variety of media, radio, on all the hot button issues when it comes up, when they come up in the media. So they're doing great work. But the other thing that we found and more we do this, is that these principles that underpin what we do in the media, or what they do in the media, apply in everyday life. I sometimes feel like a Tupperware salesman, because I've been sold on the message. After training and doing it, and seeing it work so effectively, it's changed the way I preach. It's changed the way I speak in schools. It's changed the way that I speak to my non-Catholic immediate and extended family on Christmas Day. It's really changed the way I interact. So that this whole idea of Catholic Voices is a communication strategy rather than a media strategy. And then it can be applied in a whole variety of different things. So today I want to do two things with you. And I have, it all comes out of the book, and I'm selling the book that, it's not my book, it's their book, the book written by the founders, How to Defend Your Faith Without Raising Your Voice. I've got some copies here, but you can get it online. But you will today, it's a bit like Oprah, you will get a take home with you. You get the 10 points that I'm about to go through here on a sheet of paper, so don't feverishly write them down. But they come out of the book. So I want to go through these 10 points and just really help you get your head around them a little bit. And then we want to apply them to a hot button issue, just to give you the example of how it works. Sound okay? Very good. The first point, and this is fundamental and underlines the entire principle. When somebody comes at you, whether it's in a parish setting or in a school setting or across the Christmas Day table, and says, why does the church teach this? First thing you must do is look for the positive intention behind their criticism of the church. This takes a reworking of the brain. You actually need to stop, and you will need to have done some homework. But you need to look and see, rather than focusing on the argument, you need to look and see, what value is this person trying to uphold? What value are they defending? Someone comes at you with an accusation against the church. Why does the church do this or not do this? It's very easy to get stuck in a battle of negatives. But you actually need to stop and go, okay, they are holding this position so strongly because there's a value underneath that that they are trying to defend. More often than not, atheists and secularists and agnostics in society aren't going to want to admit this, but more often than not, those values are based on Judeo-Christian values anyway. Underpinning most values within society are Christian values or Judeo-Christian. But it's about finding that value, and more often than not, you will be able to agree with them on the value that they're defending. So an example would be same-sex marriage. And this is where the proponents for same-sex marriage have actually have won in a PR battle because they speak about marriage equality. So proponents of same-sex marriage are saying, we want equality. And when you hear someone from the church, priest, layperson, family member, defending the church's position, all they're hearing is someone saying, you don't want people with same-sex attraction to be treated equally. And you're never going to find a point of agreement. But if you actually say, what are they really saying? They're saying, we want these people to be treated equally. Is there anyone in this room who doesn't agree or wouldn't go to the stake over the value of equality in our society? No. Equality is a Christian value. So we start at equality and move our way then to the Christian teaching. Hopefully it will become clearer when we look at some more scenarios like this. Number two, you want to shed light on the issues, not hate. I learned very early on in my time in the seminary that I was never going to convert my pagan friends at 12 o'clock on a Friday night in the pub. What is the Catholic Voice Christmas? You're not going to win them over in one argument. It's a new parish, and the person's coming the door, and they're railing against you, against the church's treatment of children and the bishop's covering up of sex abuse. You're not going to convince them in that first. But if you can shed just a little bit of light, a chink of light, on what is the truth, then you've done your job. It's a very hard one, because it means you have to trust in the Spirit. You have to shed a bit of light and trust that the Spirit will do the rest. There's enough heat out there about these hot button issues already. Abortion, same-sex marriage, euthanasia, IVF, contraception, sexual abuse. There's heat out there. They're bubbling. That's why they're hot button issues. You just need to shed little glimmers of light. Should be self-explanatory. People won't remember what so much you said as how you made them feel. It's possible to win an argument and lose a soul. Very easy. And this is a lesson. There's a few priests and bishops in the room. You might have been as zealous as I was in my first couple of years of the seminary. You go in and then every battle becomes a battle that you've got to win. And I now, especially having done this, but having matured a lot, realise that I've probably done some damage to some relationships that will only mend over a great deal of time. Because my zeal to win an argument left people feeling terrible. So you might have great arguments. You might be the best theologian. You might win an argument, but you might lose a soul. People prefer stories to lectures and listen to experience rather than arguments. So my example of this is I do a lot of vocations talks in schools and I get a lot of girls, and when I open the floor to questions, one of the first questions I get asked from the girls in particular is, why can't women be priests? And rather than going into a long diatribe about the church's teaching on the male-only priesthood and where it comes from and the history and the theology of it behind it, I ask them, I'll ask you, who is the most influential Catholic in the last 100 years? Was she a priest? Next point. I've just used an example. I think it works for them. You don't have to be a priest to achieve greatness in the church. But I've used an example. Rather than going through a whole theological lecture, so again, and in preparing people to do TV interviews, we really speak about this. But in our own lives, it's a faith that we're trying to express. So we should be using examples from our own lives. Not willing to speak about your own faith. You should be working for the church. This is more of a specific one to the TV interviews, but I think it's something that we should be thinking about. So we speak to them about thinking in triangles. Most TV interviews are 3 minutes long. So we say to them they need to have 3 distinct points, clear points on the issue, that no matter what the question is, they get their 3 points across clearly. Now, whether you're preparing for a TV interview or whether you're talking to a young person in your youth group or your parish, the reality is they spend a lot of time on Facebook, a lot of time on Twitter, and a lot of time watching TV. I think you could safely say that people now think in 3 minute soundbites. So whatever the tricky issue is, again, remembering that principle that you're trying to shed light, not heat, you're trying to open it up and leave the rest to the Spirit, you want to have 1, 2, 3 points about the church and sex abuse. So when the person comes in, you're there, you're present to them, you've enlightened them a little bit, and you haven't let them berated, and you've let them out with just a little bit more hope. It's also important, and this is the 10 o'clock on a Friday night in the pub scenario, is that your conversation generally gets off track. And you'll start talking about this, and then you'll be on the avenue, and sometimes you contribute to that. So again, trying to be concise and keep the argument or the conversation on topic. Number 6. It's that old adage, you're a Christian, are you? Oh, okay, has someone told your face? Like, remember, this is good news. The church, yes, we hold very strong things. Yes, they're challenging. But we're proclaiming good news. And we actually believe that we hold these things because it promotes flourishing. It brings happiness. And if we're not positive and happy in what we're saying, they're not going to believe us. Be compassionate. Students in Australia at the moment are somewhere between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 women in our country have had an abortion. I say to school kids all the time, or young Catholic groups in particular, think about that next time you're sitting on a train. How many women on the train have an abortion? And say you're having that conversation with someone from your church opposite you on the train. How many women are overhearing what you're saying as a representative of the church, even when you don't want to be? Are you being compassionate to the need that they have? Even more importantly at the moment, how many victims, legitimate victims and family members of victims and families that have broken up because of the damage that clerical sex abuse has done? Our first response must be compassion. And I think we've seen this with the Truth, Justice and Healing Commission. I think Francis Sullivan is doing wonderful work in that. The end, underlying, and we all know this from our pastoral practice, underlying all the hot button issues is an ethical dilemma. And at the end of the day, people, when you make a statement, feel that you're making a judgment call about them. So you need to express compassion, first and foremost. Check the facts, but avoid robotics. And again, this is something that's more specific to the internet, to TV interviews, but I think it's something that we can sometimes be tempted to fall into. Statistics can sometimes appear abstract and inhuman. So you need to have research, have statistics at the back of your mind. 1 in 4 women have an abortion. I have that statistic at the back of my mind. It comes from the Medicare process. But it can't be your only argument. But at the same time, and this is where I think we have an important responsibility. And Francis Sullivan, I think, is a good example. When he's presented with a fact about sex abuse that is absolutely wrong, he's willing to stand up and say, that's wrong. So the big one for me, not about sex abuse, but is people who say, church numbers are going down, seminaries are closing, vocations are declining. I know from my own seminary that seminary numbers are going up, vocations are increasing, and the average age is going up. So if someone says it, I'm willing to call them out if they're actually wrong. But I can then speak from actual experience. I know the fact that I'm quoting that. Number 9, this is the big one. It's not about you. So public confession to make. We did the entire Catholic Voices training program and we grilled them and they get recorded. They get put in a studio environment and we bring in a real journalist who sits down and they've never met the journalist before. And they do an as-live interview. They get recorded, and then it gets played back to the entire room. And we all sit there, and we give feedback. And I give the worst feedback. You know what I mean? I get to give the sort of the church feedback. And I give the worst feedback. And then they all went out, and they've been doing wonderful work. And then about 3 months ago, we had a refresher course. And we brought in a journalist again, and the camera crew, and we set it all up. We then realized that over 18 months of doing this program, I've never actually done an interview. And I thought, right, I'll do it. Good teaching tool. So I sat in the chair, lights go on, the red light went on the camera, and the journalist started. And my back went up, and the hairs on the back of my neck went up. And I thought, I'm going to squash him like a fly. I've got all the right. It was my natural reaction. I felt that he was attacking the church that I love, the church that I've given my life to serve. And I took it personally. And I wanted to squash it. Okay? You've got to put your ego in the back seat and let the Holy Spirit work through you. That video will never see the light of day. See, when someone attacks the church or a church teaching, it's very easy to feel that it's a personal attack. You need to be able to dissociate and be rational and clear and patient. And number 10, it's about witnessing, not winning. So at the end of the day, your job is to be a disciple and to proclaim the gospel. It's not about dazzling arguments or turn of phrase, it's about helping them to find the truth of the gospel. That might take a long time. That's the 10 points. So we're handing out the notes. So it's the rookie teacher mistake, I know, of handing out notes before the end of the lesson. Hopefully you'll find them helpful. I want to look now at a couple of issues if we have time, but we'll start with abortion because it's a very hot button one, but it's also a very real pastoral reality. Well, in my parish at least. I don't know about the others. How we respond to the needs of women who have had abortions is only going to become more and more of a pastoral reality as the years go on. I want to look at it, and I want to help you, and we're just going to work through it in the way that we would with the people we're training for Catholic Voices to prepare them for the issue, but in the sense that it's as an example for you that if you want to apply this approach, you need to do homework. You can't, the person walks in and says, I've had an abortion, you can't go, right, I'm going to apply the Catholic Voices principles. You actually need to have thought about some of this at home. So first of all, I just want to play this video, which is just a compilation of some of our team answering some of the tricky questions about abortion.
I think that the current position of the Catholic Church is based on its compassion for women. I mean, we look at women and we see that the fact that they can bear life is a beautiful thing and is something that should actually be respected and not seen as an illness or something that needs to be kind of covered up. And I would like to live in a world which encourages the idea that pregnancy is something to be enjoyed and the bond between a mother and her child is something to be valued and not seen as an illness that needs to be fixed or prevented.
No, I think the health and safety of the woman is private issue. And the man involved, such as the father of the child, the husband or boyfriend of the woman, needs to be fully involved and supportive of her in this situation.
And rather than creating these laws, we need to be looking at the root, I guess, of the problem. And that is the fact that women are not being given options, not being cared for such that they have to turn to abortion.
Because at the moment, women are often in a situation where they feel like they have no help. And so that's definitely something we need to improve on.
And as Catholics, we think that all parties are important. The woman and her well-being is important, but also the child, the father, and in this case, the doctors as well.
I think that the place for people outside clinics is to offer support and to be non-judgmental and to really help these women in what is a very traumatic situation.
My mother was pressured into abortion when she conceived a child with disability, endured a great deal of stress, and now having had her child, and luckily she's been blessed to have adequate support, she is having an incredible life. So I think all women should have that opportunity.
I think the response needs to be a community response saying to these groups, look, the best thing we can do for these women is to help them, give them real support. There is no benefit in sort of scaring and vilifying them. We need to have a real positive approach to this situation.
And in terms of the actual legislation that's currently standing, it's actually at odds with people or people I've spoken to, their views on abortion, that while they may agree that a woman has a right to choose, she also needs to have every option available to her so she can make an informed choice.
I think this is a very hot button issue. I think, especially as Catholics, we hold a very strong stance on it, so I think we need to be able to speak about it appropriately. So let's go through the process. The first step is, what is the neurotic issue? What are they saying about us? So I'm assuming that, sorry, the first step is identifying what the Church teaches, but I assume in a room full of this much wisdom that we're all clear enough with the Church's stance on life and life issues. So we now need to put that on the shelf for a moment and say, what are they saying about us? What's the neurotic issue? Why has this issue become so hot button? Has anyone got something? So the woman. Is there a teacher in the room? Anyone? Please? Come me out here. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so a woman should have the right to choose. What else do they say? What do they think about us, the evil Catholic Church? What do we want? Yes. Oppressing women. Men in black dresses are oppressing women. That's what they're saying. Men, a male-only hierarchy oppressing women. Yes?
Yes.
Backyard. We want women to die in backyard abortions. Yes? Catholics are just stupid automatons who don't know what they're doing. And what's even worse is that these stupid Catholic automatons, again, I'm obviously caricaturing on a big scale, but Catholics who don't use their rational function then want to enforce that on a secular society. So the phrase, get your rosaries off my ovaries. It's on the placard. They want, we're in a secular state. Yes, we might have a Catholic Prime Minister and a Catholic Governor General, but they have no right to enforce their point of view. So Tony Abbott was accused of being a Catholic, and that's why he banned RU486. And what else are they saying? Yep. So let's keep that, just because we're the world's smallest whiteboard. Let's just put, that whole era of the church, you know what I mean? Because again, and that's something that you can apply across many of the hot button issues. It's irrelevant, it's old fashioned, superstitious,
out of touch,
no men, no women at the top, only men. So all of those accusations against the church. Barefoot and pregnant, chained to the kitchen sink. That we want to force women to have children, even if it's unsafe, even if they can't afford it. We want to force children to be born into poverty. We want to force children with disabilities to be born to a life of suffering. Yeah. So what about women who have suffered from rape or incest? Are we going to force them to go through the trauma? So a second trauma. Okay. Just because of the time, but that's a pretty good. So you need to get yourself in the headspace of what are these people saying about us? What are they accusing us of? Step two, you then need to be able to identify what values they are trying to uphold. So they're saying these things, these are their arguments, these are their accusations, but what values are they actually trying to uphold? So let's have a look. What are they saying when they're accusing us of wanting women to die in backyard abortions? Or, so the other one, the less sort of aggressive one of that would be women with pregnancies that may result in death through childbirth. So what are they saying? What's that? So what are they saying? What value are they upholding? Women's health.
Yeah.
Women have the right to good health care. Oh, we might change colours. So, women have the right to good healthcare. What are they saying when they're saying that Catholics are brainwashed?
They've got to think for themselves.
Uneducated.
So, what value are they upholding?
Rational.
Free, rational. And again, if we apply that to then teaching it to the rest of society, we live in a society that is secular, that is free, and that values rationality. So again, remember, we're putting ourselves in their shoes. We've got to put it into the positive. So they're saying, you Catholics, you're superstitious, you're brainwashed, you're just listening to the men in Rome. They're really actually saying, all people should use their minds. And we live in a society where we value this. And we value the freedom in order to do this, and no one should force anyone, to do something against their own reason and their own conscience. That's what they're really saying. So I think technology is another one. So I am talking here about that accusation about Catholics who just believe. That idea that we don't use our rational mind, we don't think about these things for ourselves, we're on just decrees and we just follow along. Which is the complete opposite to what Australia should be. We should all be thinking and rational. And so then technology, so that whole thing of relevance and up-to-date is another one altogether. What are they saying when they're saying the second trauma of abuse? But so what are they, what's the positive? What are they, what value are they defending?
Compassion.
Yeah, compassion. Yeah. A woman's right not to be abused. So they believe that having this child will continue to carry on the cycle of abuse from them. So a woman's right not to be abused. What are they saying when they say women have the right to choose? What value are they defending there?
Free will.
Freedom. Free will. What about that whole idea of children who are disabled or are going to grow up in poverty and that abortion should be okay in those circumstances? What values are they defending? For?
The child.
For the child. So children shouldn't suffer. Children shouldn't grow up in poverty. We'll stop there for the time being. You can always add more. Is there anything in the pink box that anyone in this room disagrees with? If you hadn't seen the green box. That's the point of the whole exercise. These are the areas that we need to start. This is where we need to answer. No matter what they're presenting, no matter what they're arguing, no matter how much you feel, if you present back the church's catechetical or theological teaching, which is true in what it is, all they're hearing is that you are trying to squash this. You need to get the church's teaching. I'm not saying in any way, shape or form that we don't need to present the church's teaching. But in some instances, especially in hot button areas, it can't be our first response. It can't be the first thing out of our mouth, because all they hear is that you and your church are trying to crush these values that I'm holding dear to. Does that make sense? So the third step, and see now hopefully you understand why I'm saying you need to do your homework. What's the third step? You need to find everything the church has ever said on these things. Let's do a little bit now. What does the church say about the value of women? So we didn't put sort of, we didn't really look at the one about men oppressing women. So what are they really saying about men oppressing women? Equal rights, but a woman is... Well, yeah, but what is their positive? What are they saying?
Woman is equal.
Yeah, woman is equal. Woman should be valued. Woman should be loved and cherished and supported and encouraged and should flourish. So let's start there. What does the church say about women? So women's dignity. What do we say about the woman's right to work? And healthcare. Education. I mean, the church is rich with this stuff. What do we say about Mary? I mean, now again, I wouldn't start with Mary. But you need to have in your mind what the church says about women. Because they're saying you are just a group of men oppressing women. What they're really saying is women should be valued and cherished. Women have equal dignity. And that's where you need to answer. What are they saying about free will? What does the church say about free will? And conscience, and the right to exercise conscience, and the fact that we live in a secular state. Does the church, do the bishops, want Australia to be a theocracy? Do they want Tony Abbott to change the constitution so that everyone has to be Catholic? No. Exactly. So again, their accusation will be that the church is trying to squash freedom. But we have a great and rich heritage about speaking about free will and rational thinking and the use of mind and the following of conscience. Who is the biggest private provider of education in this country? Who has the most places in private universities? The Catholic Church. Who started universities? The Catholic Church. We want people to use their mind. We want them to rationally think. We're not afraid of rational thinking. Yes, we then need to get to the next point of explaining how that rational thinking is used for the good and the promotion of flourishing in life, but that's the second point. What does the church say about children who shouldn't suffer? Physical abuse, emotional abuse, poverty. I'll get to this really in a second. Let's just talk about children growing up in poverty or children being abused or children not being wanted. Does the Catholic Church have a positive message to say about
this? Yes, they do, not at all.
But the little children come to me. Who runs the orphanages and the things like that? Yes. Yeah, and again. go back to this. Okay, so I'm giving you the framework. You then need to, in your conversation, so this is your homework, and then in your conversation, you need to apply these 10 principles, one of which is show, don't tell. You need to have the examples of what we should be doing. And you need to have examples of what we are doing. I'm very lucky in my parish in Melbourne, we have a pregnancy assistance centre where women can go and be provided with support and, you know what I mean? I have a tangible thing that I can say, this is what we are doing. Have we skipped any? Okay, what does the church say about disability? Have we got a positive message about disability? Do we have a positive message? What do we say about children who are born with disabilities?
Careful.
They need to be cared for and loved, cherished. What does it say if a society is judging someone's value or worth based on whether or not they have disability? We then have to have a look at, I mean, this area in particular, this area of women with dignity and that whole right to choose. But, and you would have seen it in the video here, and the guys follow this through quite regularly, that idea of, is a woman being given all the options? Is she free to choose? Does she have a choice? Does the 16-year-old girl, whose parents are strict Catholics, will throw her out of the house? Now, there's not many of those anymore, but there might still be some nationalities in particular, some ethnic groups, whose boyfriend says, I'm not supporting you, but I'll drive you to the clinic. Does she have choice? Is she being presented with the option? And again, that's where, again, that idea of showing, not telling comes through. You know what I mean? That idea of finding some of those stories. Or if there is personal stories, you know, so Teresa from Catholic Voices in the video speaks about her mother's story. You know, she obviously has that story that she's willing to share, and her mother's willing to share. And again, so the thing is, it's not just about responding, but it's about having those positive alternatives. So what are we saying? We're saying children who are disabled should be valued and should be cherished, and society should be there to help them flourish. And they shouldn't be unwanted. We should be having more adoption. You know what I mean? We can either say, well, society's not doing anything about helping children, I want children, well, that's just sad, they're going to have abortion. Or we can say we need to change society. And what's the church doing? And what's your parish doing? Exactly. And again, that's where those great examples, if you've got them from personal experience of children with disability that have brought joy and love into families. So again, that's an example of showing up home. So the person's saying, well, you want to oppress this woman and not let her have an abortion because this child is going to grow up with a disability. What they're really saying is that children with disabilities shouldn't be made to grow up in a society that isn't going to love them. And we're saying, I agree. It should be a society where disability is not a hindrance. How many of our Catholic schools are providing care and special care for children with disabilities? Okay? We need to be funding and be willing to say we're not doing enough and we should be doing more. But that we want to live in a society not where disability is seen as something that we don't value and there's something that should be ended or should be seen as a gross suffering, but we want to live in a society where disability is cherished. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So again, you're getting 4 weeks worth of training in a 1 hour window. I mean, it's not gonna, but I just wanted to just help you get your head around the process. I mean, and you can do this with same-sex marriage. You can do this with contraception. You can do this with all of those hot button issues. Look at what they're saying about us, but underlying that, what are they defending? Is it equality? Is it respect? Is it equal rights? Is it free will? Like, look and identify, and more often than not, those will be the points that we'll be able to find a smidgen of agreement. And if someone can walk away from the conversation with you going, well, they're not as bad as I thought they were, then that's the start. And you'll be the person that they'll then come back to.
Yeah, so you're saying to me, you, the church, wants to make this child with a disability suffer and grow up in a society. Suffer because you don't want abortion, so she's going to have the child, and therefore it's going to have to grow up in poverty. And all I'm saying is, I don't want to live in a society where a child with a disability is seen as someone who's going to suffer. And I don't want to live in a society where it's not willing to do absolutely everything to support these women and these children. And I don't want to live in a society where children, no matter what stage of the family they come in, first child, second child, etc., no matter what, I don't want to live in a society where a child's growing up in poverty. And that as a church, I think the church would stand with me on that kind of stuff, and we should be doing more. And the church, and this is where our social justice teaching comes in. So once you've been through the process, start with your three key points. So the woman that comes in and says, the church, what? I haven't been to church for 40 years because I had an abortion when I was 16, and my mother told me it was a sin, and she took me to the priest and I went to confession, but I've never been back. What do you have to say about that? I'm not going to present just like that, but whether it's abortion or another issue, you know, we see it all the time. What are you going to do? What are your three positive messages to that woman going to be? My first one would be, God loves you. And that the church values you as a woman, no matter what you've done. Again, we would all do it in a different way. And whatever way you want to do it, if you know what I mean. It's that fine balance, and again, this is the pastoral line that you have to tread, and we all have to tread, between not letting the person off the hook. And it's not just this issue, any of these hot button issues. So again, in no way am I advocating that the church equivocates on her fundamental teachings. We have to get to the fundamental teachings. Pope Benedict told us, in relation to dealing with people with same-sex attraction in particular, but it can apply to all these hot button issues, you cannot be truly pastoral if you're not sharing the truth with the person. But it's about saying, if this person is away from the church, if this person is separated, primarily because they feel that the church is aggressively attacking values that they're trying to uphold, how do I let them know that the church isn't attacking those values? How do I suggest little glimmers of light on what it is that the church is teaching on these matters so that they will come back? Study young people all the time. You should never be, and this is just on the pro-life area, and this is not a pro-life talk, obviously, but it was just the issue that we picked up. But you should never be so pro-life that you're the last person a person in a crisis pregnancy would come to and ask for help. The pastoral circumstance would normally be, and this is the way it presents in schools more often than not to me, is that a young girl will come out and very passionately have a go at you in the third person about the church's teaching on one of these matters. My first, whenever it comes, my first response, especially after doing this, is either she or a friend of hers or a sister or even her mother has had an abortion and she knows about it. So again, sorry, it's generally when somebody is not presenting on their own part, but when they're presenting as, I don't agree with the church because of the church's teaching. How do I want to respond? I want to shed a few bits of light on what the church's actual teaching is. But not so much the church's teaching on abortion, but the church's teaching on the dignity of women, the church's teaching on free will. So this person walks away, and she's still not going to agree with the church, but she's going to go, well, maybe the church does say something about women that I'm not quite sure. Maybe I should do with women.
Well, these issues come up so often in Catholic schools. You know, is there any thinking that this can be translated into a school environment where youth are leaving Catholic school able to defend their faith and use apologetics to some extent when they're having to defend their faith in a hostile environment?
The Catholic Voices people just came up and spoke, you're from Sydney, to all the principals and RECs of Catholic schools up here. So one of the other things about training these teams of young people was not only that we put them in the media when the media calls, but they've got all these skills and they're sitting around week by week when the media's not calling. And every day the media doesn't call Kathleen, the coordinator of Catholic Voices, is a good day, you know what I mean? We're not waiting for news to break, we're glad when it doesn't break. But they're sitting around, so they're now going to schools and parishes. Now at the moment they're all Melbourne-based, but if you've got a big enough budget, they're happy to fly to Sydney. As a priest, we obviously know the church is teaching about sin, in particular grave sin, is that what must be freely chosen, and that people's freedom is lessened by a variety of circumstances when we're talking about lots of differences. So again, I would be encouraging her at some point to find a priest to sit down and talk, because in reality, there may not have been freedom there at all. And it may not have been a grave sin. It was still a grave matter, but her freedom was lessened to the point that she...
I think she's
I've seen it in my pastoral, and again, we've moved into the life issues, and this was not the topic of the talk, but it's here. But I see it in pastoral reality, and the bishop would see it as well. I've seen it in women where their rational mind, and I've seen them cycle between the two of them in front of me in the chair, where their rational mind tells them, everybody has told me that this was the only fair and just thing to do. The doctors, the spouse, her heart, the mother within her, was telling her she knew the terrible thing that she'd done, and she was cycling, and that will take a very long time. And that's why we have to be very careful in this area in particular. And that's why those principles of compassion and being a witness, witnessing to the truth, and our truth is a holistic truth. So yes, there's truth about life, but there's also truth about forgiveness and redemption. Okay? So if all they're hearing from you is the life side of it, and they're not hearing about forgiveness and redemption through the church, and that Christ is there for them and he's waiting for them to come back, then they're not hearing the fullness of the truth. You're not witnessing. You might be winning arguments, but I am conscious of the time we have gone over time. I've only got to go to dinner, so if you want to keep going, I'm happy to keep going. Again, if we're going to try and apply these principles to the pastoral reality of someone presenting in front of you, you need to stop and say, this person has a whole heap of values that help make them make this decision. And most of them would be in this box. And remember that more often than not, if we can unpack those values, we will find that we can agree with most of them. Sometimes, and the marriage equality thing, this box is riddled with a few things that we just can't synthesize. And we need to be able to pastorally and gently sort of draw those things out. There is some differences in the values box. But more often than not, so if she's had it because she was 16 and because she wanted to finish school, we value the right of young women to have education. Okay? So we can, without condoning the behaviour, we can endorse that value. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. It's about finding the values that they're trying to defend and saying, this, we're going to work from this level. I'm happy to answer the questions. Please, sorry, let me just finish. Go home and do more reading. Read those 10 principles and just remember that thing of finding the positive value behind the intention. If any of you are rich, very, very rich, Catholic Voices on their website accepts donations. They would like to employ someone full-time. So if you're very, very, very rich, I've got a business card up here for you to take from me.
Thanks for listening to the Proclaim 2014 podcasts, recorded by Cradio and XT3.com.